All right, Doug said, standing on a table in the cave. This is your meeting. Let's hear what you have to say. Almost the entire population of Moonbase was jammed into the cave. Only a skeleton crew was left on duty at the monitoring center, and they were piped into this meeting through the base intercom. The dinner shifts were finished. The other tables and chairs had been pushed against the far wall so everyone could gather into the space. From his vantage atop the table, Doug saw their faces focused squarely on him. They were standing shoulder to shoulder. The only empty spots on the floor of the big cafeteria were the little squares of grass. Edith Elgin, now in a Moonbase issue white coverall, stood off to one side, where she had set up both her minicams on tripods to record the meeting. Ginny Anson was standing in the front row at Doug's feet. She asked, "Well, are we independent or not?" The acoustics in the cave were good enough so that she didn't need amplification. Doug answered, "There's been no confirmation of our declaration of independence from the UN, or any recognition by any country on Earth." "Great," someone sneered. "Physically, though," Doug went on, "we're showing that we can exist independently of supplies from Earth. The UN hasn't allowed a flight here since the peacekeeper mission took off. We're under siege. Big deal." "Wait a minute," one of the women asked. "You mean we can't go back Earthside if we want to?" "I don't know," Doug said. "I'm sure we could arrange with Foray for transport to take people back Earthside if there are enough who want to leave to make a flight necessary."
"What about us?"
asked the manager of the Canadian dance troupe. Doug lifted his hands in a gesture of helplessness. "Until we can negotiate your return Earthside, you'll have to remain here as our guests, I'm afraid. But we have contractual obligations, dates in a dozen cities. I can let you call Foray yourself, or your government in Ottawa," Doug suggested. "Unfortunately, no one is returning our calls."
"I don't want to be stuck here forever,"
another voice called out. "It won't be forever," Doug said with a grin. "It'll just seem that long. My son's birthday is next week." Doug made a can't-be-helped shrug.
"How soon can I launch my survey satellite to the far side?" asked Zoltan Kadar.
He had pushed his way to the front row, Doug noticed. "That's a good question," Doug replied, stalling for time to think. "We'll have to work it out with the logistics program to see if your launch will use any supplies that we might want to hold on to, in case this siege goes on for a while."
"All I need is rocket propellant and some electricity," Kadar shot back.
His rocket would be propelled by powdered aluminum and liquid oxygen, both extracted from the regolith and both in plentiful supply, Doug knew.
"We'll see," he said to Kadar. "What are Lev and Joanna doing?"
a man's voice asked from the crowd. "They went Earthside to negotiate face-to-face with Foray and the rest of the UN leadership," Doug said.
"Have they met with Foray yet?"
"Not yet. They were detained at the peacekeeper base in Corsica for a couple of days, but they're back in Savannah now. She should be meeting with Foray in a few days at most, I guess."
"How is this thing going to be settled? Are we going to be an independent nation, or will the UN take us over?"
"It won't be the UN," Doug said. "It's starting to look as if Yamagata is really behind this whole business. If we lose, then it'll be Yamagata Corporation that takes over Moonbase."
"You mean the whole thing is a fight between corporations?"
"No," Doug snapped. "That is not what I mean. This crisis is a fight between our right to live and work the way we want to and a power grab by the UN and or Yamagata Corporation. The question is, do you want to keep on living and working the way you have been, or do you want to be shipped back Earthside without a job?"
Someone said, "But if Yamagata's going to take over the base..."
"They'll staff it with their own people," another voice countered. "Yamagata's not going to keep us, that's for sure."
"What the hell can we do?"
Ginny Anson turned her back to Doug to face the crowd.
"I'll tell you what we can do. Fuck 'em. We don't have to ask the UN for independence. We are independent. We can live here indefinitely. And if we have to expand the farm or build more solar cells outside, we can do that. We don't need those fuckers. We're free!"
The crowd roared, but from Doug's vantage atop the table, it seemed that almost half the people in the cave were roaring in protest against Anson's outburst.
"Okay, okay," Doug said, waving his hands to quiet them down. "I've got to admit it, Ginny. I agree with you about 95%.
"Only 95%?
She planted her fists on her hips defiantly. "Hey, I want to get back home," a man hollered. "I don't intend to spend the rest of my life here."
"Me neither."
"Listen," Doug said. "For the time being, nobody's leaving. We're in a state of siege, looks like."
"For how long?"
"Until this thing gets settled, one way or the other," Doug answered.
"Or until the peacekeepers come back with more troops," came a voice from the rear.
Doug conceded the point with a nod, thinking that if he were pushed far enough, Foray might destroy Moonbase rather than admit defeat.
"Okay," Doug said, loud enough to bounce his voice off the cave's back wall. "We're going to have to act as if we really are independent. Ginny's right about that. As long as we're under siege, nobody can leave, so we might as well go about our work and show Foray and the rest of those flatlanders that we can get along without them."
"Then I can launch my rocket?"
Kadar asked.
"We'll look into it."
"But I still want to get home," a voice wailed.
"Once this matter is settled," Doug told them, "anyone who wants to leave Moonbase will be free to do so. And anyone who wants to stay here permanently and become a real lunatic, you'll be free to do that, too." They asked questions and gave opinions and griped and argued among themselves for more than another hour. As Doug watched and listened, he realized that very few of these men and women had ever thought about remaining at Moonbase indefinitely. They were all contract workers, even Ginny Anson, accustomed to working on the moon for a fixed period of time, then returning to Earth, to home. Of all the people here, he realized, only Zimmerman and Chris Cardenas and her husband have consciously decided to live in Moonbase permanently. Maybe Ginny, he conceded. Her marriage had broken up because she spent so much time at Moonbase while her husband stayed Earthside. And me. If I have to go back Earthside with these nanobugs in me, some crackpot nano-Luddite will kill me sooner or later. That's the sweet part of religion, Doug thought. You can be as fanatical as you want in the name of God. The mercenary hung at the rear of the crowd, wondering how long these people could go around the same mulberry bush. Then Kadar climbed up on the table beside Doug and began telling them all in elaborate detail how wonderful the Farside Astronomical Observatory was going to be and how important it was to the future of the human race. People started to drift out of the cave, most of them still talking among themselves as Kadar droned on unperturbed. As if talk's going to do any good, the mercenary thought. They've been talking for damn near 4 hours with nothing to show for it but a bunch of sore throats. He watched Doug climb down stiffly from his perch on the table. Okay, he told himself. Doug's going to go back to his quarters now. Christ, it's after midnight. Okay, just tail along behind him, and when he gets to his quarters, invite yourself in and get the job done. Day 11.
It's past midnight,
Claire Rossi said tiredly as she trudged along the corridor that led from the cave to her quarters. Nick O'Malley at her side towered over her like a red-headed bodyguard. He nodded. I've got the early shift tomorrow. Gotta be up and moving by 6 a.m. She smiled up at him.
You can sleep in my place. It's closer.
He smiled back. How could I refuse? But once they were snuggled in her bunk together, Claire whispered in the darkness.
Maybe I should get an abortion.
She felt the shock that went through him. Abortion? Why? You can't. I don't want you to. Feeling more miserable with each word, Claire said,
With all this going on, all this uncertainty, and if there should be any complications.
He touched her bare shoulder tenderly. You feel okay, don't you? There's nothing wrong, is there?
No, she said. I feel fine.
Then what's this talk about abortion? I don't like it.
It's just...
She couldn't put the words together. Just what? The siege thing? Don't let that frighten you. Even if we have to go back Earthside, we still have employment contracts. Masterson Corporation will have to honor our contracts. We'll have our jobs.
Suppose there's fighting.
How could there be, he said. We don't have anything to fight with.
But Doug said Yamagata wants to take over the base.
He propped himself on one elbow and looked down at her. And what's that got to do with it?